Well, this is the final session, and I want to thank you all for your patience and your attentiveness. In this session, we're going to return to our theme for the weekend, which was marriages that offer life. I forget how the exact wording was, but life-giving marriages is what we want to talk about here. And whenever we think of life-giving marriages, we're talking about marriages where we are pouring life into one another. We are building one another up and offering life to one another. And then out of that inflow of life to one another, there's an outflow of life to our children and to our church community and to our neighbors and to everyone that we interact with. That's what we want to talk about this morning. The source of that life. Brother Mark has already given us three important principles that need to be in place in order for life to be flowing forth out of our lives. When I think of life-giving marriages, my mind goes to the words of Jesus in John chapter 7. It was the last day of the feast, and Jesus stood and he cried. And I think that means he lifted up his voice and he got everybody's attention. And he said, if any man thirst, let him come unto me and drink. He that believeth on me, as the scripture has said, out of his belly it will flow rivers of living water. And can you imagine how that impacted the people? Who is this man that says, if you believe in me, out of your belly is going to flow rivers of living water? And then the next verse gives us the commentary on that. It says this: spake he of the Holy Spirit, which those that believe on him were going to receive. So those of us who are believers, who have the Holy Spirit dwelling within us, we have a source of life. We have a source of joy. We have a source of strength that puts us in a position where we need to be giving life and offering life to others. And this is not just some fine theology. We have counseled with enough of couples to know that when marriages go bad, the opposite happens. They become a drain on one another, and they suck the life out of one another. They get up in the morning with this heavy spirit. I'm married to this needy person who is not receiving life from God and who is just drawing life from me. And I want to tell you, there is this phenomenon which we cannot fully explain, but it seems as though many marriages can endure in the early years. The hormones are highly charged, and there's children in the relationship, there's children to care for, but many times after 20, 25 years, if there is not this life-giving relationship, it's like the cistern runs dry. The energy is depleted, and like I poured into this marriage all these years, and after a while, people get discouraged with marriage, and they're like, the other person is never going to change, and I'm stuck in this relationship that is just draining me of vitality, and the marriage dies. And that happens. And that's what we're here to try to encourage us to live together in such a way that we're not only not draining life out of the other person, but rather we are actually infusing the other person with life and energy. And that life and energy comes from God through Jesus Christ by way of the Holy Spirit dwelling within us. I want to talk this morning about a subject that always goes along with marriage. And Brother Mark touched on it this morning. I want to talk about romantic love and keeping romance alive in your marriage, because that's what makes marriage fun and that's what makes marriage last. But Mark kind of put a negative twist on it. So I need to begin by defining what I mean by romance. And we're going to talk more about that as we get into the subject. But the idea, some people have the idea that romance is something that you catch like a virus that comes through the room. And some people get, they get caught with this room, the love bug bites, and they are, they fall into love. And this romance, you know, they've got this disease that is consuming them, and they say, oh well, it'll soon pass, you know, just like a virus. Eventually, you get over it. Eventually, they'll get over it, and they'll come back to Earth and realize that, you know, it was just a fleeting feeling that they had. Well, what I want to talk about is much more than that. That's what Mark was talking about this morning, that you can't build a relationship on just some fleeting feeling, okay? But I want to talk to you about romance in a little different level than that. The Song of Solomon, Solomon wrote in his song, "Set me as a seal upon thine heart, as a seal upon thine arm, for love is as strong as death. Jealousy is as cruel as the grave. The coals thereof are coals of fire, which hath a most vehement flame." This doesn't sound like some fleeting feeling, does it? He said, this is something that is powerful. This is something that is lasting. This is something that is going to transform your life. Many waters cannot quench love, neither can the floods drown it. It's like a... I heard this story recently of Tesla. They had a boat trailer hooked onto a Tesla, and they were trying to unload the boat at the river, and the whole machine rolled down into the water, and this Tesla caught on fire in the river, and the fireman came. It's underwater, burning underwater, and the fireman didn't know what to do. How do you put a fire out that is underwater? That's the way love is, okay? You can't put it out. You can be underwater and it keeps on burning. That's the kind of love that he's talking about. If a man would give all the substance of his house for love, it would be utterly contemned. So that's the kind of love. When we're talking about romantic love, we're talking about that kind of love. Romantic love is a potent combination of physical attraction and personality compatibility. I'll give you several definitions of it. Romantic love has suffered much at the hands of well-meaning individuals, of which the church is not exempt. Some people develop an antagonism towards romantic love. Perhaps that is because it has eluded them and they never experienced it. For others, they have experienced it and they lost it. Some hold it to be transitory at best. Others claim that it is just glorified lust. I can't help but remember whenever we were in the early days of our courtship, I had a deacon brother come to me, and he said to me, he said, are you sure this isn't just the lust of the flesh? And I said, oh, no, it's not that. I said, I've prayed about this, and I feel certain that this is the Lord's will for us. Some think that it's just glorified lust. Others say it's something you fall into. Others say that it's a choice, so that you could fall in love with anybody if you chose to. But when the cynics have had their say, the fact remains that deep in the heart of every person is a longing to be loved intimately, passionately, and enduringly. And today I want to invite us all to go there, to open the door of our heart to love. If you have loved and lost, if you have been hurt by love, I want to invite you to open your heart to love. And I do that with the assurance that you will not be disappointed. How can I have that kind of assurance? It goes back to Calvary. It goes back to the love of God and what God has done for us through Jesus Christ. We all can receive love. I invite us to face honestly our heart longings to love and to be loved. Everyone longs for that. Because love is what determines the quality of your life. It is what will shape your life. What you love will shape your life. and I just put a note in here. Please note, I am not talking about self-love. And in the world that we live in, there's a lot of that out there, and sometimes it is promoted. Take care of yourself at the expense of others. Self-love is an oxymoron. Self-love is not actually love at all. It's just pure selfishness is what it is. Love is only love. The love in your heart wasn't put there to stay, because love isn't love till you give it away. So love is something that has to be passed on to others. For many, romantic love is conferred to novels and considered to be unattainable or unrealistic. But even the most staid person harbors a secret longing that someday someone will steal their heart away and love them the way they long to be loved. And that's the kind of love that we want to talk about this today. Romantic love consists primarily of delight in and an intense desire for the person of the opposite gender. Romantic love is focused on the one and only object of his or her affections. It's an exclusive relationship. And Mark talked about that. If your spouse can know that she or he is, and I say that because, you know, often we think of it's the ladies that worry about the hearts of their lover being turned away or distracted. But, you know, I counsel a lot of men that are longing to be loved and to be valued by their wife. And so this desire for exclusive love relationship is not gender specific. It's in all of us. It's in all of us. Romantic love accepts the whole person without trying to coerce or to change the other person. Paul said, love bears all things, endures all things, believes all things, hopes all things. That's the nature of love. And we want to talk more about that. Romantic love is endures the inevitable changes of life. Paul said, love never fails. So I would like this morning to talk about romantic love in a little different way, because it has to do with the meaning of this word, romance. We have our idea of what romance means. Look it up in the dictionary, and what you will find is that the word romance refers to fantasy, or that which is unreal, okay? So why are we talking about fantasy? Why are we talking about that which is unreal? Well, that's the nature of romantic love. Notice with me, Brother Galen read these verses last evening down in our men's group from the Song of Solomon. Notice this this lover talking. Notice how he talks about the one that he loves. He says, "My beloved is unto me as a camphor, as a cluster of camphor in the vineyards of Engedi." Okay, he says. As she says, as an apple tree among the trees of the wood, so is my beloved among the sons. And then he responds, behold, thou art fair, my love, thou art fair. Thou hast dove's eyes within thy locks. Thy hair is like a flock of goats. And he says, that appear in Mount Gilead, thy lips are like a scarlet thread. Thy neck is like the Tower of David. Is this real? Is really her hair like a flock of goats? No, her hair really isn't any different than anybody else's hair. But this is the nature of romantic love. It sees things that aren't really real, that aren't really there. Was he really like an apple tree? No, he wasn't like an apple tree at all. He was just another guy. But this was romantic love. And so she was envisioning, he was seeing things that were not real. That's romantic love. What's that have to do with us today? Well, we can say what we will about romantic love. The greatest love story that was ever told, the most dramatic romance story is the story of Jesus and his love for us. Because he looked down on earth and he saw us, those that we had created. Mark talked about that. But we had fallen into disgrace. We had fallen out of fellowship with our Creator. And shame and guilt and sin and remorse had disfigured us. We were not this beautiful, glowing bride. We were disfigured by sin. We were marred by sin. And yet God, in his infinite romantic love, Jesus Christ took it upon himself to woo and to win this disfigured person back unto himself. He looked down and he saw in his bride, the reality was that we were lost and we were disfigured by sin. That was the reality. But the romantic nature of God's love, he saw the potential there. I believe that I could love that person back to beauty and wholeness, and so that person can return to me the love that I have for her. That was the heart of God in providing salvation for us. It was to secure a bride for his son, Jesus. That's what it was all about. And so Paul wrote in Ephesians that we are supposed to love our wives the way Christ loved his bride and gave himself for her, that he might sanctify and cleanse her with the washing of the water by the word, that he might present her to himself as a radiant bride, not having no spot, no wrinkle, or any such thing. That is the power of romantic love. And that's why I say I want to talk about romantic love. I want to talk about how we can love one another to wholeness and to fullness. Love one another the way God loved us. That's exactly what Paul said here. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself for her so that she could be whole, so that she could be beautiful, so that she could be glorious. He uses the word glorious. No spot, no wrinkle, or any such thing. So romantic love, in other words, it is a hallucinating love. We're seeing something that is not real. And I want to encourage us in our relationships. Now, I know that we are human, and when we chose our bride, we chose someone that appealed to us. Our love was not quite as sanctified or as divine as God's love for us. We chose someone that appealed to us. But like Mark said, then we went home and we discover that we are living with someone who is also a sinner, someone who is maybe not as glorious as what we thought they were. And so when we talk about romantic love, we're talking about seeing beyond what is and seeing the potential in this relationship and loving that person with that potential in view. So romantic love sees with love-struck eyes. Love beholds the good in the beloved. It chooses to focus on the good. It exaggerates the good. It overlooks the bad. It forgives the bad. And it seeks to redeem what is bad. Peter wrote, "But above all things, have fervent charity among yourselves, for charity will cover the multitude of sins." I think you heard my wife say that she tries to make me look good. And she does a good job at that, because I need someone like that to make me look good. And that we should be doing that for each other. Advancing what is good and helping one another to overcome what is bad. I've told this story here before, and if you've been here before, you may have heard it, but I think it illustrates very well the principle that I'm trying to communicate. The story of Johnny Wilkes and his wife, Sarita. Johnny Wilkes lived on one of the South Sea Islands. I don't know which one. And Sarita lived on a neighboring island. Now, on these South Sea Islands, they had a custom that when a man wanted to get married, he had to buy his wife. And he had to pay for her with cattle. And so there was always the challenge to come up with enough cows to get the wife that you wanted. And it so happened in that culture that the most beautiful brides cost the most number of cattle. So if a man had a very beautiful daughter, he may be able to get as much as 4 or 5 cows for her. If she wasn't so beautiful, he may have to settle for 2 or 3. That's just the way it worked. Well, Sarita was not beautiful in any sense of the word, and she kind of was the brunt of a lot of jokes. And behind their backs, the community guys talked about, you know, he might be good to get 1 cow for Sarita because they thought nobody would want her. Well, Johnny fell in love with Sarita. Johnny Wilkes fell in love with Sarita. He lived on an adjoining island, and he met Sarita. He fell in love with Sarita, and when the time came to bargain for the marriage, he went to Sarita's father, and he told Sarita's father, I want to pay 8 cows for Sarita. 8 cows for a bride? This was unheard of. Nobody had ever done such a thing. Nobody had ever paid 8 cows for a bride. Well, Johnny was determined that he was going to have an 8 cow wife. Johnny paid 8 cows for Sarita. The rumors flew through the island. Sarita's dad, Sarita's dad must have really pulled a fast one to get 8 cows for Sarita, but that's what Johnny wanted. So Johnny and Sarita were married, and Johnny took Sarita back to his island to be his wife. Time passed, and sometime later, Johnny and Sarita visited Mom and Dad's island again, visited the family, and Johnny brought his bride back to the home village where Sarita had grown up. And Sarita was just glowing. She was just glowing with radiance. She was this radiant bride. Because on her island now, she is the only 8 cow wife on the island. And she's like the queen of the island because there is no other woman that was an 8 cow wife. Sarita was an 8 cow wife. And because of the value and the sacrifice that Johnny made for Sarita, she became an 8 cow wife. She became a glowing, radiant, beautiful bride. I think that story illustrates the power of romantic love. Johnny saw something in Sarita that he liked. He saw the potential that was there, and he was willing to make the sacrifices to bring out that potential. Now, you might say, that sounds like a romance story. That sounds like a fictitious story. We were in Ireland 2 years ago, and I told this story there. I was there for a weekend on marriage, and I told this story there. And after the service was over, this guy comes up behind me and he claps me on the back. He said, "You wouldn't believe it," but he said, "I had to buy my wife with cows." He said, "I paid 2 cows for my wife." He said, "My father-in-law was so happy." He said, "Because he had never paid for his wife, and so he said he passed those cows on to his father." But he said, "I paid 2 cows for my his wife came from Africa." So you got to be careful where you tell these stories. You never know who's listening and what might happen. But the principle behind it is, you know, the value you place on your spouse, and this works both ways. This isn't wives can destroy their husbands. We've seen that happen. Husbands can destroy their wives, but the value you place on the relationship and the way you love one another makes all of the difference between whether your relationship grows and blossoms or whether your relationship withers and dies. Jesus looked on us. He loved us in spite of our sinfulness. Jesus looked on us. He looked beyond our sins and beyond our human foibles. He looked on us and he saw the potential that we were created to become, potential that had been hijacked by sin. And he said, what that person needs is love. The secret longing of her heart is to be loved. And I'm going to love that person. I'm going to love that person even unto death. And Calvary is the full measure of the love of Jesus. John wrote, greater love has no man than this, than that a man lay down his life for his friends. So Calvary is the measure of the love of Jesus. And you know, we were talking on Friday night about covenant and the difference between the new covenant and the old. And this is really the big difference between the new covenant and the old. The old covenant was based on law and retribution. The soul that sinneth, it shall die. It was based on blessings for obedience, curses for disobedience. That was the nature of the old covenant. And many times in our relationships, we revert back to that kind of relating. If you do what I like, if you honor me, if you please me, then I will respond, I will please you, I will bless you, we will have a good relationship if I'm getting what I want out of the relationship. The new covenant is based, John said, the law came by Moses. Grace and truth came by Jesus Christ. The new covenant is not only new because it follows the old. The new covenant is new because it is based on an entirely different set of principles. Paul explained that in Romans. The Hebrew writer explained that in Hebrews. The new is so much better because the new has redemptive value to it. The new is not just about do or don't do. It's not just about obey or don't obey. The new is about a relationship, a life-giving relationship. Believe on me, Jesus said, and out of your innermost being is going to flow rivers of living water. This spoke he of the Spirit, which they that believed on him should receive. So whenever we're talking about romantic love this morning, we're not talking about this fleeting feeling of, wow, she is beautiful, she strikes me the right way. No, we're talking about the enduring kind of relationship, the sacrificial love, the laying down of our lives for one another so that we can have an intimacy in our relationship that is enduring and that goes on and on and on. Laying down our lives for one another. That calls for sacrifice, and it's something that we may be reluctant to do at times. But, you know, when we get married, we expect our wives to take on our name. When we got married, Marianne's father, who married us, introduced us. He almost forgot, but I think he did finally think about remembering. As Mr. and Mrs. Donald Breckville, whatever happened to Marianne Shirk? Her identity all of a sudden was swallowed up in her relationship with me. She became Mrs. Donald Breckville by virtue of the marriage relationship. And her identity was swallowed up. Now, as life unfolds, the reality of that becomes very, very real. All of a sudden, we are not our own anymore. We belong to each other. I'm trying to decide whether or not to share this story, but this was a stark reality to me. It was the day I came to realize that I'm married. We grew up on a dairy farm, and I grew up on a dairy farm, and there was my dad and my three brothers farmed together, and our acreage was scattered out all over the place. And it, the way we operated, if we had a break, if I was out mowing hay on the back 40 and I had a breakdown, we would jump in the truck and go to town and get the parts that we needed, and come back and get the thing fixed up as quickly as possible and get the thing rolling again. Well, one day after we were married, I sat down at the dinner table, and I said to Marianne, when I was in town this morning, I don't know what I said, but I said, when I was in town this morning, and she's like, you were what? I said, I was in town this morning. I said, you went to town, and you didn't tell me or take me along? I said, no, I needed parts. I went to town. And I realized that, oh, in her family, going to town is an event. I mean, you keep your grocery list, and you plan for it. You set the date for it, and you go to town as a family. It is a major event. For us, going to town was just something that happened in the course of the day. But for her, it was a major event. And so I had to do all. I realized I am married, okay? I can't just do what I want anymore. I need to at least get call or say, hey, look, I need to run to town. Do you want to go along? And that sort of became the way we did after I realized that, oh, I am married now. I'm not just free to hop in a pickup truck and go to town whenever I need to go to town. I need to consult with my wife. I need to take her along. I need to let her know where I am. I am now accountable to her. I am married to her. She is my wife. I need to lay down my life for my wife so that I can have a glowing, happy wife. I want to have a happy wife. I don't want to have a sad wife. So I don't go to town without letting her know. They're very, very practical things, but these are the kinds of things that we run into in marriage, isn't it? And you all probably have your story about how you realize that all of a sudden, oh, I'm married. I can't do like I used to do. I now need to love my wife and blend. We need to blend our lives. So romance is seeing the potential, seeing the possibilities in your relationship, in your spouse, and then living in such a way as to bring that out and to encourage that. Another story, and this has to do with doing marriage seminars. My wife was actually very timid and shy. She has a very outgoing personality today, but when we were young, she was very timid and shy. And when we did our first marriage seminar here back in 2002, after the brochure came out, one of her friends that had been a longtime friend called her up and said to her, he said, I see you're listed for a marriage seminar. And she said, whenever I saw your name on the program for a marriage seminar at Penn Valley, she said, I couldn't help but think of the old cigarette ad, you've come a long way, baby. So I'm just simply saying marriage changes us. And we, if we're not willing to let go of our independent self and to blend in marriage, then we can have a difficult time. Okay, a few practical pointers, and then we do have roses to distribute here shortly. Make your spouse your best friend. Mark talked about this exclusive relationship, and be willing to invest in your marriage so that your spouse is your closest and your best friend. Make your spouse look good. We already talked about that. Emphasize their good points, their strong points. Don't focus on the negative. I just thought of another story. My wife's parents were, they were very much in love. They were, my father-in-law was just smitten with he was very pro-marriage. I left it slip that I started courting her at 16. The only reason that happened is because he was very pro-marriage. If it wasn't for that, I'd have probably been, anyways. One day, he told us that one day, is this okay to say? Anyway, his wife, She couldn't do anything wrong. And one day he said that he was talking to Mary Ann. He said, "You wouldn't believe what my wife made for supper this week." He said that she cleaned out the refrigerator and she dumped a lot of things into the blender and pushed the button. And he said, "You won't believe how good it was." I don't know what it looked like, but he was so smitten with his wife that he was able to enjoy that meal. So make your spouse look good, and we can do that. There are practical ways that we can do that. Do things together. Like I said, you know, if we need to run to town, we do try to do things together and try to find as many opportunities as you can to be together and to do things together. Respect one another's opinions. And I talked about this the other day. Even if you don't agree, okay, allow her to have an opinion that differs from you. Allow him to have an opinion that differs from you. This is the kind of love that builds. Learn to disagree agreeably. We're kind of going back and rehashing some things that we already talked about. Be transparent. Remember, we talked about being naked and unashamed before one another. Pray together. Celebrate your love. And I think you're doing a good job of that. That's why most of you are here today. You're here to celebrate your love. And as you do that, your love will grow. Jesus said, "I am come that you might have life and that you might have it more abundantly." That's the will of God. And that's the plan of God for us, that we might have life and that we might have it more abundantly. The songwriter wrote, "Eat, O friends, drink, yea, drink abundantly, O beloved." And I want to encourage you to be doing that, to drink deeply from your fountain of love and be to one another a fountain of life, imparting life to one another. So God bless you. And as you seek to build your marriages, and I believe that as you do that, I believe that marriage, Mark referred to it as a strong tower. I believe that godly marriages in our day are one of the most powerful testimonies of the grace of God and the way in which God can transform lives, because there's so much brokenness in this world, and when there are marriages that are strong, husbands and wives that are pulling together, that is a testimony of the grace of God. And so God bless you as you continue to share the gospel of Jesus Christ through your marriage.